This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land. We are down to the final two. It is the Pittsburgh Penguins just squeaking into the Stanley Cup and the Nashville Predators. I'm your host, Edward Fraser. I'm here with Matt Larkin, writer, and Dominic, can I buy a vowel, Loose Chicken. I think I got that right.
You did get it right.
Very good.
It's actually pronounced Loose Chicken.
No, it's
loose?
Not.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Or just call him Promiscuous Chicken. Bark, bark, bark. I think it's a good nickname for Dom. I'm going to start calling him that. Just saying.
I wish that this was a video podcast, because Matt's impression of a seductive chicken is one for the ages. I'm going to put a video up on Twitter. So we're going to go through the series today, bit by bit, and break this down. I'm disappointed that Ottawa didn't get through, but let's face it, Pittsburgh makes for a better series against the Nashville Predators. I mean, I think it's going to be a more exciting brand of hockey, let's put it that way. But let's start right off the top. Let's talk about the offense and who gets the edge in which category. Matt, who do you like for who gets the advantage offense-wise?
I mean, it's closer than some people might think. I mean, the Penguins are the highest-scoring team in the regular season and the playoffs. The Preds are actually the third highest-scoring team in the playoffs in the field of 16. So they're both good offensive teams. The Preds do it from the back end. But at the same time, there's just no matching what Pittsburgh can bring offensively. And they've shown in these playoffs they can win offensively in two different ways. Earlier in the playoffs, they were actually getting outshot. They got outshot at 7 of their first 8 wins. But they've got such elite shooters. Phil Kessel, Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby. They can score even with a limited number of opportunities. And then they flicked the switch in the last few games against Ottawa. They started peppering the Senators, badly outshooting them. And that was sort of the Penguins team we saw last year, where they're generating chances with stretch passes. You have Justin Schultz back in the lineup, Trevor Daley back in the lineup. Penguins just swarming like a hornet's nest, lots of shots on goal. So they can beat you in so many different ways. Offensively, I think they're overall the more dangerous club. I give the edge to the Penguins.
Dom?
I'll have to agree. For the reasons you touched on were interesting, because they're both very good offensively for different reasons. Preds have probably the best offensive blue line in the league. They can move the puck up to their forwards, who aren't as good, and especially with Ryan Johansson out, it's hard to see them generating as much offense as they did earlier in the playoffs, whereas the Penguins have all these great forwards and no one to really pass them the puck except for maybe Justin Schultz finally back, although his shoulder is kind of screwed up right now. So I do think the Pens have the edge in offense here, mostly because they have the firepower up front, and they finally looked like a team that we expected them to be in the last few games against Ottawa.
How much did the injuries to Pittsburgh defense impact their offense, though? I mean, it was different against Ottawa, but Nashville's a more come-at-you team than Ottawa was. So the transition game is going to be much more important than that. If they can't get some of their guys back, or Schultz isn't at 100%, how much does that affect their play?
I think it has a big impact, especially with no Chris Letang, and we saw it earlier in the playoffs, especially earlier in the Ottawa series. The Penguins, you know, the guys they've been forced to work with, your Brian Dumoulins of the world, your Ian Coles, they have no choice but to play a simple meat and potatoes game. They move the puck quickly, and they can't generate chances off the rush the way Erik Karlsson did for Ottawa, or the way Ryan Ellis can for Nashville, or Matthias Ekholm can for Nashville, or Roman Josi can. It goes on and on. PK Subban. But at the same time, the Penguins work really well under that system, and they use those stretch passes to spring the forwards. You see them get a lot of breakaways. Phil Kessel had that one in overtime where he glitched out. He almost spazzed.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Schultz is back in the lineup. Daly's back in the lineup. So there's been a lot of talk about Pittsburgh's injuries, and yes, they still don't have Chris Letang, but that blue line is getting healthier, and this is as healthy as it's been throughout the playoffs now. So that advantage that Nashville could have had over a really banged-up Pittsburgh team, it's not as big as it was. Now it's just a somewhat banged-up Pittsburgh team.
And it's especially in light of the fact that this is going to be a very spread-out series with a lot of rest. So I think that kind of gives an advantage to Pittsburgh, who is nicked up a little bit, whereas Nashville, their injuries, unless you're going to save the Stanley Cup until next season, they're not getting any of their guys back. It kind of tied in very much so to the offense on the Predator side is their defense. And Dom, you mentioned the most offensively potent defense in the league. I don't think I even really need to ask who has the advantage in the back end there, but let's get a little deeper into why. What makes the Predators' defense so magical and why it really carried them all the way to the Stanley Cup?
It's amazing to me that they have four guys who could probably be number ones on most teams. You have debates about where Subban fits in the lineup. In my opinion, he's obviously number one, but people we'll say maybe it's Yossi, maybe it's even Ellis with this playoffs he's doing. And
Ekholm. Yeah, love Ekholm.
Ekholm's amazing. And just the fact that you can even have this debate with a guy as good as PK Subban is just amazing to me. And they play, like, the four of them all play 25 minutes a night. You only got 10 minutes for that third pair. So it's not much room for error, basically. And you'll have, like, Pittsburgh has the advantage of having Crosby line and Malkin line. No one can match up with that except for Nashville, because they have two pairs that can take care of that.
Is there any concern that as good as their offense is at generating, or sorry, as good as their defense is at generating offense, do they have that shutdown capability? I mean, obviously, the best defense is a good offense, but when you're dealing with guys like Crosby, Malkin, they can keep rolling. Is it all worried that this is just going to be too much for Nashville's defense to handle?
It's a great question, and to me, the answer is absolutely yes. The Predators do have shutdown ability, and I'm going to steal from Ryan Kennedy. I'll try and do an impression of his voice. Ryan Kennedy, hi. I'm Ryan Kennedy.
You got to go about 12 octaves lower if you're going to do that. You're not
capable. California voice, but... and it was Ryan who said this, and it's Nashville fits the modern incarnation of what it means to be a defensively sound defenseman. And they're not bruisers, even though Ekholm has the size to be a bruiser. They don't beat you with huge hits, not four Scott Stevenses out there, but it might be four Scott Niedermeyers out there. Mm. And they beat you with great positioning, great stick work, great gap control, and they're all very good defensively, all four of them. If you look at the Corsi numbers and the Corsi against per 60, all that kind of stuff throughout the regular season, they're a great quartet. And what's interesting to me, and this is why the Preds have the edge in defense, that's why I officially picked them, is, you know, you look at Erik Karlsson, who was the neutralizing factor in the Ottawa series, he can play half a game. And you can choose to match him against, say, Crosby half the game, whenever possible, but then that obviously leaves the Malkin line exposed. But with Nashville, you've got Josie and Ellis and Ekholm and Subban, two different pairs who can play 25 minutes a game each, so you've got 50 minutes of the game on average in these playoffs, 49 or 50 minutes right now, with those defensemen on the ice, which is unbelievable. So I do think they have what it takes to at least be Pittsburgh's equal when it comes to neutralizing Crosby and Malkin.
Poor Matt Weber and Yannick, or poor Matt Irwin and Yannick exactly. Weber.
Matt
yeah,
Weber, Yannick
yeah, whatever.
Potato, 11 minutes a game.
You're just basically keeping the bench warm at that point. Obviously, the offense and the defense was pretty straightforward. I think goaltending, however, it's not as clear cut. On who has the advantage here. Dom, let's start with you in this category.
This is a tough one because I've been very hard on Pekka Rinne over the past 2 years.
You and the entire advanced stats crowd have been very hard on Pekka.
Yeah, and...
And deservedly so.
Because he... How can you say he's this elite goalie while also saying, look at these amazing defensemen in front of him, right? And he's always put up... like. Since, I think, like, 2010-11, when he had his best year, since then, his numbers have been really average, and it's been the same thing this year, and then in the playoffs, suddenly, he's unbeatable. And through every round, his save percentage has dropped slowly. Against Chicago, it was, like, 976, St. Louis, 932, Anaheim, 925, and is it just going to keep getting lower to what he's supposed to be at? Because he's not a 940 goalie. That's what he's in the playoffs. He's not that. Matt Murray, on the other hand, is probably one of the league's best young goalies right now. And if Fleury was still in, I would say it's a toss-up because Fleury's in the same vein, a type of average but good goalie like Rinne. But Murray's, I think, is a special goalie, and he gives Pittsburgh a bigger edge than expected here.
And it's close. It's very close, but I'm with Dom. I mean, I'll defend Rinne briefly. I do think he sometimes is a better goalie than he gets credit for because of the style he plays. And I'm stealing a bit from some good advice I got from Jamie McLennan, who knows his goaltenders, and he really analyzed Rinne well. And he said, Rene's rebound control is so good, he doesn't give up many second efforts, and second efforts are what produce lots of shots and higher save percentages.
Interesting.
He works really well with the defense because he plays smart, he stops the puck, he's good at pushing the puck up to the defenseman, which starts rushes in transition going the other way. So I think he's a very smart goalie, he's a very athletic goalie, he's got the best glove hand in the NHL.
Vacuum of a glove hand.
But at the same time, I agree with Matt Murray. I'm a huge Murray supporter, and I believe if Murray had enough games to qualify, he'd be the NHL's all-time leader in save percentage right now in the regular season. He's been that good. And if you just looked, I mean, to me, Matt Murray, in a nutshell, was his play in overtime of Game 7. And Fleury's had a great playoffs. And Fleury is an exciting goaltender. He's an athletic goalie. But when he's bad, he's also very bad because he's way out of position as an athletic goalie. But Matt Murray was just, he's just a straight line. He's calm as can be, icy cool. He, you know, doesn't, compared to Craig Anderson at the other end, it wasn't like Murray was making these wild acrobatic saves, but it's like he didn't have to because he's always in position. He's just calm in the net. And I look at Murray and I think if I was a Penguins player or defenseman, I'd think, I'd feel so good with him back there.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think, even though it would be fair to say it's a wash, I still think if we're looking forward and projecting the rest of the playoffs, I give Pittsburgh a slight edge with Matt Murray.
I think you should get prepared to dislocate your shoulder here, patting yourself on the back, because I do want to give you a bit of credit, because it was 2 years ago that you were pounding the table on Matt Murray, and a lot of us around the office are saying, Matt Murray, I mean, they've got Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, he's not even going to get in the net. You were right. I mean, bang on 100%. Guy's got one cup, looking like he's going to get his second fairly soon. Oops, did I just ruin our series pick here? hold on, we're getting there. But yeah, Murray bang on. And to me, I think he provides that same sort of calmness between the pipes that you'd get with a Carey Price. And I think that goes a long way to permeating through your defense and then through your forwards. And I think that's huge when it comes to team confidence. Let's move on to special teams here. Let's start with the power play, first of all. Pretty big disparity here. But let's start, Dom. What are you thinking about the power play for the Penguins and the Predators?
Night and day. Yeah. The Penguins' power play is terrifying for me. Anytime I see it, I just expect a goal, even though I know it's not likely. Whereas the Preds' power play, I'm not sure what they're doing when they're doing things, and I almost feel like a goal is a surprise to me. like, wow, they got
a
one.
Damning indictment.
He scored!
He scored?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys follow Tyler Dello on Twitter, but he's been railing on this a lot about how the Preds are forcing a lot of shots from their very talented defensemen, but those are low-quality shots, and they need to get more pucks, I guess, inside to the middle because they're not doing that. And especially now with Johansson out, who is one of the focal points on that power play, it's not looking good for them.
Mike Ribeiro, where are you? I don't think we're going to see him.
Yeah, I'm with Dom. I think part of the problem with the Preds is that they do have, finally, for really the first time in their franchise history, some bona fide goal scorers in Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson. But neither of those guys will ever be mistaken for, like, John LeClair in his prime. Like, they're not big guys, right? They don't have that big monster net front presence, I think. I think that's something that they lack. And the Penguins' power play is, I think, almost double the efficiency of the Predators. It's just so multifaceted. They have so many shooters. It's not like you can key on one guy. They rotate Phil Kessel and Evgeny Malkin at the points in the way that, like, it's like this giant rotating. I think it's like a diamond shape that they use. So either guy can rip a shot from the point. And then you have Crosby, who's mastered that crazy play where he puts his knee down on that cross-crease pass. So no puck gets past him. He either knocks it in or he stops it with his shin pad, which is so brilliant. Just little example of Crosby doing all the little things right. It really is night and day. And I hate the fact that when we say night and day, it makes me think of that horrible Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz movie.
Oh.
That was what I thought of immediately. Ugh.
That's the movie that disproves the Paul Dano theory.
Oh, yeah, because everything he's in is good.
Everything that Paul Dano has ever done is good, except for
night and day.
Except for night and day.
It's night and day versus the rest of his career.
I've never felt younger.
All right, well, let's power play, not even really worth discussing anymore. Penalty kill, let's discuss the PK for both teams.
See, to me, the PK, both teams are pretty strong. They're both, I think Pittsburgh is 88 or something. Nashville's in the mid to high 80s as well. I don't see a major edge for either team, except if you're gonna split hairs. I mean, Victor Arvidsson brings a special element to the Preds because he's so dangerous shorthanded. So that might be a slight tiebreaker. But if you add power play and penalty kill together, penalty kill to me is a wash. Power play is a huge edge for Pittsburgh. So overall, special teams, I give a decided advantage to Pittsburgh.
I think the Preds' power play is so bad that I think the Pens might get the penalty kill edge just from how bad it is. Cause
that's fair.
Okay. Normally, the Preds, I think they'd have a much more impressive penalty kill just because of the personnel they can have, especially on D, and the Preds, or the Pens right now, don't really have that. They don't have Victor Arvidsson up front either. So I want to say Preds, but I feel like their power play is so stoppable that I can't imagine that they even score a goal. I mean, Ottawa scored, I think, like, what, one or two power play goals against the Pens? They looked pretty good in the last series, so whole special teams package, I got to go with the Pens.
I'm going to use this as a segue into coaching, but I just want to warn in all this one-sided talk for the Penguins that the Preds have now had how many days off before their series was done? A lot. Math is not my strong point, but they've got a long layoff. That gives Peter Laviolette and his assistants a long time to work out any kinks in the power play. You never know what they got up their sleeves now that they know who their opponent is and have a couple of days to work it out. So it may not be as bad. And now that you know that you're dealing without Ryan Hansen, you can bring in new personnel, you've got some practice time, which is not something you get day to day in a playoff series because you're just getting rest. So now they've had a few days. Wouldn't surprise me if the Preds had a couple of tricks up their sleeve. So let's move over to coaching on that. Who gets the edge here? Mike Sullivan, obviously it's been clear. He's done a brilliant job coming in, Stanley Cup last year, changing the entire philosophy of that organization. But Peter Laviolette, big change with the Predators as well. What do you think about the coaching situation?
I think there's going to be a recency bias toward Mike Sullivan, obviously the defending champions, and he took over the team last year, midseason. The Penguins have been a juggernaut ever since. And I love Sullivan. I love the effect he has on the team. He's got a great system. And, you know, it's a sign of great coaching, testament to great coaching, when you're losing so many guys to injuries and you keep winning because the system works. But that said, Peter Laviolette, also a Stanley Cup winner, and he's also a very successful coach. He also puts his unique stamp on the team. And I find, if you look back at the New York Islanders, the Flyers, the Stanley Cup champion Carolina Hurricane team that he coached, they're all really good, aggressive forechecking teams. And I do think he gets that from his forwards with Nashville again. And I remember talking to Laviolette and David Poile right when the hiring happened. And they said, yes, our plan is very deliberate. We want to bring in Peter Laviolette to make this team more of a pace pusher offensively. And I think they achieved that. So to me, I'm going to declare coaching a wash. I think they're both great coaches. They both have significant impacts on their teams.
Snore. Dom, give me something better.
Well, the pressure's on. I won't give you something better because I have to agree. I want to give the edge to Sullivan just because he's been so impressive with the Penguins. We saw Crosby get the coach killer tag at some points through some media outlets, and
wow. It
was just unfair because these coaches, if you're a coach and you can't get the best out of Sidney Crosby, you are a bad coach.
Sidney Crosby does not need motivating.
Yeah, what kind of coach is like at practice, come on, Sid, what are you doing out there?
Yeah, it's Sidney Crosby. Yeah. He should be the best player in the world. If he doesn't look like that, you are doing something completely wrong. Mike Sullivan turned Sidney Crosby around from this terrible player. There were people saying he was no longer the best player in the world. Sullivan comes in. Okay, wait a second. We have Crosby. He's good. And he goes on a huge tear. Gets back into the MVP discussion last year. Wins a cup. Wins a Conn Smythe. And then he's better than ever this year as well. So I really love what Sullivan has done to this team. But at the same time, I don't want to disrespect what Laviolette has done, because the Preds have always been an okay team, and as soon as he came in, they, I guess, elevated themselves to someone we can consider a contender.
This is an unfair category.
It is.
You can't give an edge
for
two coaches who take their team to the Stanley Cup.
And
let's pick one that's let's pick one that's better.
If one didn't have a cup, I'd just say cups is cups and give the cup winning coach an edge.
Yeah.
But hey,
no,
they both got cups.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous category.
Two coaches, two cups.
Who produced this podcast? Who came up with this category? I'm walking out.
I can't stop thinking about Crosby being reamed out as a bad seed. Sidney, my office.
Crosby is a coach.
Yeah,
he's seen him out there.
He's Peyton Manning.
I will really, really miss Erik Karlsson mocking Sidney Crosby. That was like the highlight of the entire playoffs.
I want that so, like, you see in the NBA where they're so petty. I want that for everyone in the NHL.
100%. It makes it so much more entertaining.
The NBA. I call it the NPA, the National Predictable Association, where it's a two-team league. Like, the Predictable season just ended, and their actual NBA season is just about to start because there's only two teams in the league.
Yeah, but it's going to be incredible.
That would be great.
The two best teams, going head to head. Imagine if we got Ottawa versus Anaheim. I probably wouldn't have watched. I'm not gonna lie.
But what about the other 6 months of the predictable season? It just you may as well just skip to the end.
It's still
entertaining to the people that watch.
It's wrestling. It's wrestling. Yeah. So the first three rounds of the NBA playoffs were like the non pay per view telecast where a guy beats up on a jobber and it's a staged, and then you get to the pay per view, which is the NBA finals.
As good as the ending is of the NBA season, it's not worth 6 months of foreplay.
I feel like there's problems with both leagues. They're at separate scales on the parity matrix. NHL, too much parity. NBA, way too little parity.
Ooh.
There needs to be a middle ground.
I could 100% get on board with the too much parity argument. I could do a whole podcast. Well, I could do a whole podcast on the loser point,
right,
and then I could do a whole podcast on parity.
There's too much.
Just my one-man show railing against parity and the loser point.
Baseball,
two-part series.
I think baseball and football are a happy medium. When you say parody matrix, it sounds like a Radiohead album.
It's a great album. Parody Matrix is a fantastic album.
Have you heard Parody Matrix yet? Unbelievable. They're back.
Off the rails, totally here. Let's get back on with discussing intangibles for the Preds and Penguins. Who gets the edge in this category?
I think the crucial intangible in the series is the injuries at center to Nashville. So you know Ryan Johansson's gone. Mike Fisher is trying to get back for game one. It's up in the air. Even if he does, it's still huge disadvantage for Nashville. And you look at, Colton Sissons. He comes in, steps up, has a hat trick in game six for Nashville, centering the first line. And to me, the biggest intangible is, can Colton Sissons keep doing that? Can he be, Fernando Pizzetti? Yeah, yikes. Because he's going to be matched up against, I guess, Sidney Crosby.
You got
Cali Yarncroc and guys like that. I just think no matter how strong Nashville is in goal and on defense, the disadvantage at center is just gargantuan right now. And that, to me, is by far the biggest factor going into this series. And it's not just Crosby. It's Crosby and Malkin, and then you've got Matt Cullen, Nick Bonino. They could be, right now, if you drop Nick Bonino into Nashville's lineup, he would be the number one center, I'm sure, right? Especially if Fisher's out.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big problem. But if Colton Sissons and Cali Yarncroc can keep playing well, especially Sissons, then hey, that's the biggest X factor you could ever imagine from Nashville.
It's beyond amusing that, when we were putting together playoff preview, we couldn't fit the number of injuries Pittsburgh had into our depth chart. And we were like, and now you get through, and you would have never thought that you would have never thought they would get this far with the injuries they had, but then you would get to a point where you think that their opponent is the team with the more injury woes than Pittsburgh is. Because Pittsburgh's gotten a little bit healthy, but the impact injuries that Nashville's suffered, it's to me, and that it's going to play huge. And I'm impressed Nashville got by the Ducks with the injuries they suffered. Johansson, that's a big loss. But even beyond injuries, anything else intangible-wise that you're looking at in this series?
The Nashville crowd is going to be insane. I'm so jealous that I can't afford to be there, and I live extremely far away from Nashville because it's already been amazing through three rounds. They're getting the first cup final ever. It's going to be a circus, and I feel like I usually don't buy into these things, but I feel like Nashville's a very special city where the entire, entire South is probably on Nashville's side right now, and I think they do get an extra energy, especially with Subban. He says himself that the crowd gets him going like that, so I do think that they have an edge there. Pittsburgh has the cup-winning pedigree, but I don't know. I usually don't put too much stock into it. I'm just going to go with a Nashville crowd. It will be a big factor.
I like that, actually, because I'm not a big crowd guy, and the stats have played out that really crowd influence doesn't have any influence except for on the officiating. That's their study's been done. But to me, Nashville is a different type of breed, and I hate anybody who's critical of teams like Nashville who aren't. Long-standing teams, because to me they almost bring a different type of energy, and to me it's a college sports type of energy, and I think you see that no more than when they're taunting the goalie after after they get scored on. You know, that's a very college thing to do. If you've ever been to an NCAA game, you know, every time they lift up the mask, ugly goalie. It's just, you know, now they're not quite to that degree, but it's all your fault. It's all your, which is good. You're getting in Nashville. And not saying these guys allow that to get in their head, but you can't help but pick up off that energy. And guys like PK Subban, especially, who play with such emotion, I think that could have a factor.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I do think that's one of the edges that the Preds will have. And I know what you're saying, Ed, about like the younger market. It's almost like there's a novelty there. There's, oh my God, we can win the Stanley Cup. We've never been here before. And I do think that creates a special je ne sais quoi type of energy. And I think it's fair to say it could be a little bit of an edge, especially if Nashville gets a split. If Nashville wins one of the first two games and then heads back with a split or better, look out.
Yeah, that's going to be key, because I do think it takes a bit of the energy out of it if they're down 2-0. I mean, that's the way the series is supposed to be, but you can't help but inherently kind of think like it becomes more of a nervous energy than it does about an excitable energy. Okay, well let's get down to the picks. I mean, this is the big thing. Who is going to come out on top in this series? We've gone through all the categories. It seems pretty close, but who gets the edge in the end?
I mean, I'm sure you can tell, listeners, by most of the categories that we're awarding an edge to Pittsburgh, but it's important to see.
Seems like you're sitting on the fence with most categories.
Well, just coaching. But most of Pittsburgh's edges, I think, are pretty small. They're razor thin, especially in goaltending. And I think it's going to be a very close series. I think Nashville's defense corps is going to be a massive X factor, as is the crowd, as Dom suggested. But I think you just can't. I can't get past the problem at center for Nashville. And it's not like, it's one thing to be shorthanded at center for one game to end a series and you're against Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler. It's another thing to be against Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. It's just, it's a whole other ball game. I guess I should say puck game. It's not a ball game. But either way.
The good old puck game.
Yeah, good old puck game. But yeah, so I think it's going to be a close series. I think it's going to go 7 games, but I award the edge to Pittsburgh. Penguins in 7.
Well, as you've heard from all the things I've said about Pittsburgh, I obviously think Pittsburgh's a very good team, and they're, in my opinion, the better team. They're the favorites here, rightfully so. With that being said, I cannot abandon my Predators.
Oh! Wow!
From day one, I was on the Preds bandwagon. I said they'd beat the Hawks.
This is true.
They beat the Hawks. I said they'd beat the Blues. They beat the Blues. I said they'd beat the Ducks. They beat the Ducks. From day one, I said they'd be in the Cup Final. They're in the Cup Final. They're winning the Cup in 6. That is my pick.
We got two dislocated shoulders from patting ourselves in the back here. Well, that's pretty good. I guess, do I get to be the tiebreaker then?
Yeah.
All logic says Pittsburgh. But I'm going Preds.
Oh! Yes!
I'm going Preds. I you know what? And there's no reason why. I mean, honestly, it's razor thin here.
Yep.
And I think, and that's the thing that I'm happiest about, because I think this is going to be a fantastic series. Whether the issues with center or not, I think Pittsburgh's going to have a hard time handling that Nashville defense, and I think the Predators are going to have a hard time shutting Pittsburgh down, which I think could end up in a high scoring series, which makes it a lot more exciting, because quite frankly the league needs a good showcase, and I think this could be it. And I think the fact that we're going to see an exciting series is the thing that we should all be happiest about. So any last minute thoughts about the series, Matt? You're heading to game one. How excited are you to watch some of this hockey live in Pittsburgh?
I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and the Penguins, we can't sell the Pittsburgh as a hockey market short either.
No,
the atmosphere console is fantastic as well. And I'm very intrigued about game one, because I still feel like if there's going to be a letdown game for Pittsburgh, it's game one. Predators have done their best work in the playoffs when there's no expectation for them. And I think that's going to be even more exaggerated going into game one because of the fact they're so depleted at center. I feel like people are just going to assume a big victory for Pittsburgh and they'll be off and running. And I think there's a potential for a little upset stealing game one. And I almost would be willing to predict a game one victory for Nashville, even though I have the Penguins winning the
prediction
series.
Within a prediction. Oh. How very Inception here on the podcast.
Well, that's deep.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Edward Fraser here with Matt Larkin and Dom Loosechick. Thanks for listening, everybody.